If you'll open the third book in a misnamed collection of books called the Bible. The Bible is from Babel. It means to confuse. It is the platform from which Satan operates, according to Yahweh. But it includes a poorly translated version of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. In the third book of the Torah, you'll see the name Leviticus. Who knows why? Because there is no V in Hebrew, and that's not the name that God gave the book. God gave the book, the third in his Torah, which means teaching, the name Kara. It means invitation to be called out. And then calling out and inviting us, Yahweh said, then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying, on the 10th of the 7th month is the day of reconciliations. That would make today, or depending on how you viewed the first sliver of the new moon of the month, either today or yesterday, the day of reconciliations. Kirk, is there any confusion there? Do you have to go out of your way to interpret something there to say, and Yahweh declared the word to Moshe saying that on the 10th of the 7th month is the day of reconciliations. Is there any part of that that's challenging?
No one can twist that.
So if this is the day of reconciliations and it's in the third book of that Christians, including the Roman Catholic Church, claims is inspired by God, why didn't the Pope say anything about it? Why didn't he attend the feast? Why didn't he encourage Roman Catholics to answer the invitation?
Why did he outlaw Yahweh's name?
Why did he do any of those things? Or not do those things? He says, this exists as Haya, this was, this is, this will be, a set apart, a special invitation to be called out and meet for you to approach. And your soul shall respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates the feminine manifestation of God's light unto Yahweh. So why is he talking on this day about climate change? And not the day of reconciliations and answering Yahweh's invitation?
Because he doesn't believe this is true. It's the only thing it can be. If you believe this was true,
Who said it?
Yahweh said it, but of course they don't believe Yahweh.
So, and you're claiming that you're representing God, and the God you're claiming you represent said this. So how could you not believe that it's not true?
Because you have declared that the Torah is dead. It's not a teaching instrument anymore.
Well, so the God that you claim that you represent, who can make you immortal and eternal, was incapable of communicating the truth? What he said is not true? Is that what they're saying? That the creator God of the universe lied when he said that this was a day of reconciliations? Because he said this for all places and for all people and for all time and all generations, using a language that is not stuck in time.
Uh-huh.
And so what are you saying? Are you telling me that they believe that their Bible is the Word of God, and that the Word of God is it believable?
It's flexible.
Well, this has nothing to do with changeable. He said, this is the day of reconciliations. If it's not the day of reconciliations, then he lied.
Yeah, well, that's the only conclusion you can do rationally.
Right. If he said, this is the day for you to be forgiven, that's the purpose of this day, is for you to answer my invitation to come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of my light, the set-apart spirit, and to be forgiven. That's what he said, and you're telling me that he's incompetent, that he's incapable of doing what he has... It's God speaking here. That's what he's promising. So you're saying that his promises are not credible?
According to Paul. And only according to Paul and the followers of Paul.
So let's just say that, for example, that the creator God of the universe, who created the universe, which is pretty big, undertaking. You know, it's pretty fancy universe, really big, pretty enormous. And conceived life, and last time I checked, the three-dimensional alphabet that he used, the language that he used to create life, DNA, is very sophisticated. That this God that was capable of doing those things was incapable of honoring his promises. He's impotent when it comes to forgiveness.
That's the implication according to religion.
What is the possibility that that's true?
Zero.
Hmm.
Not a chance.
Okay, let's just say, though, for example, let's just play along.
Sure.
Okay, we're playing along here, and we're saying that that God changed his mind, that his old plan for forgiveness, his original plan, his only plan for forgiveness, it was, he recognized that, you know, that was, let's use Paul's term, that was pornography, that was enslaving, that it was incapable of saving, that he just miscalculated. And he wasn't trying to be dishonest. He wasn't trying to mislead. He just made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He just goofed. And he found that his plan actually did not work. And then he, what do you think the chances are that when God recognizes that, and we're playing along here now, that his plan didn't work, that he would choose a man who was drummed out of rabbinic school as a failure?
Mm-hmm.
Who was a an egotistical, maniacal maniac by his own admission,
mm-hmm.
that was a complete fraud by his own admission, that was sexually perverted by his own admission, that was demon-possessed by his own admission,
mm-hmm.
that he would use this man and give this man total autonomy for the entire world and allow this man to come up with an entirely new plan. Because the God who created that man was incapable of it. Does that sound like to you, maybe it's a little far-fetched?
Yes.
Okay, let's just say that the God decided that's what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And his old plan was counterproductive. So the plan that he had in place for 4,000 years, totally and completely counterproductive, false hope. Anybody that trusted him was led down a path where there was absolutely no chance of salvation. Total and complete false hope, impossible, derelict plan. And now he's got this plan that is being articulated, not by his representative, Yosha, because Yosha didn't articulate this Christian plan.
No.
That after Yosha does his thing to affirm the old plan, that this guy comes along that was the pervert, by his own admission, reading Romans 7, that was insane, by his own admission, read his letters, that was demon-possessed, read Corinthians, by his own admission, that was a complete charlatan, read Corinthians again, by his own admission. That this man was authorized by God to create a new plan. What do you think the odds are if God's hands-on plan, where he actually established this himself with his people, physically present there, if his hands-on plan was a complete failure, and he couldn't even make his hands-on plan work when he brought, when he himself diminished an aspect of himself to come here to fulfill that plan.
Mm-hmm.
And empowered
by the set of our spirit as well.
Right, and to tell us, I've come to affirm this plan, but he was incompetent even in that he has actually authorized a guy to come up with a new plan, and that new plan is trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you trust a God who for 4,000 years was incompetent, and now you're saying, well, this plan, which I take totally on faith, I should believe him now, when all the evidence is to the contrary?
Well, if you believe that, I got a rock I want to say.
Could we call that rock Allahu Akbar?
Yeah, a cobblestone.
Are you going to be promoting a really big rock? I mean, Allah, the pictures of Allah, it's a couple of feet by like 18 inches. I mean, it's a pretty good sized rock.
Mm.
I'm sure you've got a really nice rock that you're going to elevate to the creator of the universe.
We set it off piece at a time.
You've got a God that actually created the universe, conceived life, and proved that he authored his Torah, prophets, and Psalms through predicting the world as it would be over a period of 6,000 years.
Now, let me interject.
And then you've got, compared to that, you've got a rock.
Mm-hmm.
1.5 billion people are circumambulating the rock?
They save up their whole lives, some of them, to go there once, walk around this rock.
Wow. So Christians aren't the only fools.
No. So let me ask you something, because you brought it up.
Uh-huh.
If God is Hayah, that's part of his name, right? He got three
that's what he told Moshe. So
the first thing he told Moshe before he even told him his name. He said,
I am who I am. I exist. I was, I am, I will be, because it was written as Haya in first person, so it's not just exist, was, is, will be. It's I was, I am, and I will be. So I was, I am, and I will be.
Okay.
And it was preceded with, linked together with, so Haya begins the sentence, ends the sentence, but it has Asher in the middle, and Asher is the Hebrew word to establish a beneficial relationship. Asher means as a preposition, it means to make a connection between things, and as a noun, it means to benefit. So relational benefits.
So if you are having to debate this,
right?
Everyone, including the Pope, would agree that he's Haya. He exists forever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, at least verbally, they'll.
Oh yeah, but they.
I know.
The Pope thinks he speaks Latin, the language of the beast of Rome, not Hebrew.
And there's prophecy involved.
Yes, so, you know what the Church once said of the Hebrew Old Testament and the Greek New Testament, as it related to the Latin Vulgate. The Latin Vulgate is the Christ hanging between the two thieves, and the two thieves are Hebrew and Greek.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how arrogant and misguided this institution is. And they weren't smart enough to make the connection that in the Greek, when it has something that is cited directly from Yahusha, like, for example, in Revelation, how they get hallelujah, it's Hebrew.
Yeah. Hebrew.
So they can't figure it out that Hebrew is the language of heaven, and yet, no, not to the beast. So let's say if there's any chance that what we have here is errant, Kirk. I had you play devil's advocate there, representing the Roman Catholic Church, trying and Paul.
I didn't do very well, did I?
No, but it's impossible to do very well in that. So this begins then Yahweh. It's written Yod Heh Wah Heh.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance that name is unpronounceable, or is that name written using the same 22 letters that allow us to pronounce every other Hebrew word?
And the most popular letters.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Haya, which when Yahweh introduced himself to Moshe, and he says, I am who I am, and he used Haya, is there any question that Haya is pronounced Haya? And so with Haya, do you not have the Yah?
Yes, and the Hayes, the two
Hayes. And the Ah at the end, so you've got the beginning and at the end, so it's Yah,
both ways,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's three of the four letters, just in the verb, that no one has any question as how it's pronounced.
No.
It's in his name.
No.
And then you're dealing with the Wah is the only additional letter. And do you think that we're mispronouncing Torah? Do you think that Torah might be Tuva or Tura or Ture? Maybe Ture is the, or Tuve. How about Tuve?
Okay.
Let's mispronounce the Hey and the Wa. Or is it Torah? And is it Torah because there's a Wa in the middle of it, and that's the O sound?
Not even with a southern accent can you blow this.
No, it's impossible. It's 22 letters, five of which are vowels. All four letters in Yahweh's name are vowels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is impossible to make an informed and rational claim that Yahweh's name cannot be pronounced. It's impossible.
Yeah.
The three letters that comprise his name, one is repeated, comprise virtually every, it's part of the 22 letters that comprise every Hebrew word, none of which is even a challenge to pronounce. So then Yahweh declares the word, Dabar. This is God speaking. Dabar, I mean, Dabar is the Hebrew word for word. Is there any question that Dabar is should be translated word?
I've checked everywhere I know to check. It's nowhere to say anybody to see.
Sometimes you can render Dabar a statement, but it's a statement with words, comprised of words.
Dabarim.
Yeah, Dabarim is words, plural. And Dabar can be word or statement, or to state, or to declare. But it's always to state, to declare, or a statement. Make a statement comprised of words.
Yes. You can vowel point it, and you can put a V.
Right.
But you have to change it to do it. You can't.
Yeah, that's right.
Not the way it's written.
Yeah, Dabar is one of two Hebrew words for word. Imrah is the other. Dabar is used over 1,000 times and is translated declare or word. Declare when it's as a verb, and word when it's used as a noun. And it's an actionable noun, so it's a noun that, since it's written identically in its noun form as it is in its verbal form, it's impossible not to know that it means to declare the word. Now, Imra, which is also word, is used a lot less frequently, but Imra conveys at the intersection of word, instruction, and promise. So those are instructional words that are offered under a vow or promise. But that's all there is to it. And then Amar is the Hebrew word meaning to say. So this is Yahweh declared the word to Moshe saying. So Yahweh's the speaker, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. First person.
So if you disagree with this, who are you disagreeing with?
Yahweh, not Moshe. He's writing it down.
Isn't it easier to disagree with me or you?
Easy.
Yeah, but who is saying this? Me or you or?
No, I'm not saying this. You're not saying this. Yahweh's saying it.
Right. It didn't even Moshe saying it. You can't even attribute this to Moshe. And then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying. Then he speaks on the 10th of the seventh month is the day of reconciliations. Now, somebody might say, well, you're projecting into it that this is an invitation to meet. He just called it a day of reconciliation. Well, what did he say next? This is a set apart, special invitation to be called out and to meet. Mikra. For you to approach. So, how are we projecting anything?
He's very clear. He repeats himself often.
Right. Now, how does this day compare to when Yahweh introduces Easter? When he talks about Easter is the day for reconciliation.
Hey.
How does it compare to when he introduces Christmas and says, Christmas is the day for reconciliation? How about the Immaculate Conception when he introduces that? What about the one where Mary is allegedly taken up to heaven? Or Halloween? Halloween is my day for reconciliation. No. So the Creator God of the universe, Yahweh, the author of life, the only one who has the ability to save, the only real God, the only one that's credible, he said that the 10th day of the 7th month is the day of reconciliation. So depending on how you look at the emerging light on the moon's surface, that's either yesterday or today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he calls it an invitation, a mikra. An invitation to be called out and meet, to read and recite. Do you think that when he chose this title based upon the verb kara, which means to read, to recite, to invite, to summons, to meet and to welcome, that's what the verb means?
Yes.
Do you think was he trying to convey any of that, or did he really want to say this is a religious convocation for the Jews only, and I just didn't have a word handy, so I chose this one, but paying no attention to what the word means?
Well, he might have invented a word called religion for the Hebrew language if he wanted to do that.
Oh, he doesn't even have a religion. Word for religion in Hebrew, does he?
No.
He describes religious behavior and national behavior.
Great detail.
In great detail, but he doesn't actually have a word for religion, does he?
No.
All right, but he does have a mikra based upon the verb kara, and it's not our interpretation. He actually tells you that mikra is based upon the verb kara, and there is no question that kara means to call out, to be called out, to invite, to summons, to read, to recite, to meet, and to welcome. So that's what the purpose of this day is. This exists as a set apart, a special day, to be invited, to be called out, and to meet with God, to be welcomed into his presence by reading and reciting for you. Now, was that for you to Jews? Was that to you only until Christ comes? Was that to you until Paul creates a New Testament and calls the Old Testament pornography?
No, it's you, all of you, each.
You,
all mankind.
It was you, the Southern you, wasn't it? It was
the Southern you, yes.
Y'all.
With two L's at the end.
Yeah, and by the way, it was preceded with law, which is the shepherd's staff in Hebrew, which means concerning you, for you, about you, but as a preposition, the preposition means to approach. To draw near. For you to approach and draw near. That's what this invitation is about. He just told you. Okay. Let's just say now that we're all confused and because the Jewish religion has confused us. And we think it's a day that we ought to afflict ourselves. We ought to beat ourselves or we ought to deprive ourselves. Can you starve a soul?
Can you starve a soul?
Can a soul fast?
Can't fast.
Can a soul be beaten and afflicted, bruised, harmed in any way?
No, not a physical thing. Can't have physical attributions.
You think God's stupid and doesn't know that? You're voting no, huh?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So he used the Hebrew word for soul, didn't he? And your soul. Your consciousness.
Right.
Should respond and answer. Okay, that's a verb. So it's your soul, that's your consciousness, your ability to observe and to respond to what you observe, to react to what you have observed, should respond and answer. The ana, this verb, maybe we're misinterpreting this verb. Maybe it's not appropriate to respond and answer to an invitation from God.
Well, that's absurd.
Okay. Okay.
No debate there.
Okay, and the primary meaning of ana is to reply to a summons, is to make a declaration, to answer an invitation. Okay.
Right.
And then he says, appearing before. So this is an invitation for us to meet and draw near, and the next verb is appearing before and approaching. Karab.
Well,
you know, if the purpose of this is a day to reconcile the relationship and for us to approach, for us to meet and to be welcomed into God's presence,
and
then we ought to respond and we put on our approach.
Yeah.
And what does he have us approach? It's the ish, isn't it?
The,
Isha.
You're right. The feminine manifestation of his, his spirit.
Yeah, of his light. Yeah, of his light. Yeah.
Light.
Yeah, his... Is there any question that Isha means is a feminine individual?
No, we covered that pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, is there any question that Isha is the feminine of fire, which is what Yahweh conveys as a representation of his light to his children?
Until the 20th century, basically. I mean, that's the only form of light from darkness.
Yeah, and isn't light, the fire of fire used to convey purification, enlightenment, elevating because of the heat and the smoke?
So to
enlighten, to purify, to elevate, and to nurture, because that's how we cook our foods, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
So
we ought to appear before the feminine manifestation of his life. Does Yahweh have a feminine manifestation?
Ruach Kodesh.
Right. Ruach Kodesh is a feminine noun in Hebrew, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And every time that Yahweh refers to the set-apart spirit, he uses feminine pronouns, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And And she is, her attributes are entirely maternal.
Yes. Well, even in Christendom, they use the analogy of a mother bird.
Yeah, well, that's because Yahweh used the Yahweh and Yosha both use the mother bird. They mm-hmm. Yahweh so, uses I mean, the mother bird reference in his creation account.
Right.
And Yosha during during his Olivet discourse, he says, "Oh, before his Olivet discourse even begins, he's saying, oh, I wish like a mother hen I could have put you under my wings."
So you can't miss this. This is
no. Well, pretty straightforward. And by the way, this feminine manifestation of his light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates, isn't the next two words the preposition la, which means to approach?
Towards,
Yeah. And isn't the next word not just a noun, but a proper noun?
Yeah, hey, why, once again.
So this is, you're being invited to respond to an invitation, an answer, appearing before and approaching the feminine adaptation of Yahweh's light to approach Yahweh.
Right.
Well, so he's giving you your instructions. This is what you ought to do. I don't know how you can get any of this wrong. Now, he says, you know, but there's something I don't want you to do. Do not perform any of the service of the feminine manifestation of my message and messenger on this life-sustaining and corporeal day.
So
do you think does Yahweh have a word for spiritual messenger?
Yes, Malak.
Malak. He uses it a lot, doesn't he?
Quite a bit, yes.
He created them, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He named them.
Right.
Do you think he knows the proper term to use in depicting them?
If he doesn't, nobody does.
Okay, and since he designed them, he depicted them, why do you think that he added the feminine hay at the end of the world to make Malak, spiritual messenger, feminine?
Because he's not talking about neutered or neutral
right.
Spirit. He's talking about a very special.
So here you have Isha, which takes the Hebrew word for individual, Ish, and adds the Ah to it to have a feminine individual. And then he speaks of a Malak messenger and adds the Ah to it to make the messenger feminine.
Right.
Do you think maybe you should make a connection between the two?
Well, I would.
That the feminine manifestation of his light is also the feminine manifestation of his message?
Mm-hmm.
And who is that besides the Ruach Kodesh?
Ruach Kodesh is the only one designated for that.
And is he associated with light?
Yes, of course.
Is she associated with reconciliation?
She is.
Is she associated with forgiveness?
Absolutely, covered.
Was she associated with nurturing?
Of course.
Enlightenment?
Mm-hmm.
And with elevating us into the presence of God, to making us look perfect, and empowering us so that we can be in the presence of God.
Bikurim.
In fact, is there any other aspect of Yahweh's nature that's credited with any of these things other than the set-apart spirit?
No, I didn't mean Bikurim, but the next one,
Yeah. Well, Bikurim is in...
That's where we are adopted.
The actionable aspect of Bikurim, where we are adopted into Yahweh's family, where our soul is integrated into Yahweh's spirit, which is the set-apart spirit, the entire action of Bikurim is the integration of our soul and Yahweh's set-apart spirit. It's entirely spiritual. And Shabuah which is the promise of seven, of the Shabbat, that's entirely spiritual as well. 100%, according to Yahusha, according to Yahweh, 100% of the empowerment of Shabuah, the enrichment of Shabuah, is the work of the set-apart spirit.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to, yes.
Right. And is not a 100% of, you know, once you hit Bikurim, and Bikurim, you're being perfected so you can be adopted by your spiritual mother into
right.
Yahweh's family. You're being born spiritually on Bikurim, and you are empowered and enriched by the set-apart spirit on Shabuah. And what are we doing? What are we empowered to do on Shabuah that relates to Teruah?
Share the message.
Yeah. In fact, aren't we blowing our mortal soul into one end of the symbol of salvation, the ram's horn, and out of it comes the air, which is the Hebrew word breath, which we're breathing into it, is the Hebrew word for soul. We're breathing our mortal soul into it, and out of it comes air, wind. It's a wind instrument. The Hebrew word for wind is ruach. It's through that, the process of taking our mortal being and conveying the message of Yahweh that is magnified and comes out as spirit, as ruach at the end of it. It's the ruach that empowers us to be effective witnesses on Teruah.
So the connection is you are going to become spirit.
Right. And so what is the operable aspect of Yahweh's nature on Kippurim?
Light.
And the set-apart spirit, yes. The feminine manifestation of his light. The set-apart spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The feminine messenger of Yahweh. And so, once you benefit from the sacrifice of the sacrificial lamb of Yahusha on Pesach, and once Yahusha's soul pays the ransom to perfect us, to render us perfect, yeast-free, religion and politics-free on matzah. Everything else from that point on is spiritual. It's all the ruach. All of it. Because when we become, when we transcend from being physical and mortal beings to spiritual beings, we're empowered to take that next step to sukkah, to camp out with God for all time. In his universe. That's what this story is all about. By the way, Kirk, I left a dangling participle in the first hour that I probably should just clean up a little bit.
Okay.
I said that when Holliday was condemning the a country that's part of the European Union, Slovakia, for telling them that they should leave the European Union if they don't share the European Union's morality and perspective and doctrines and attitudes and approaches. I call it hypocritical because Holliday, the whole debate is whether or not they should allow a million people who have the antithesis, the absolute opposite values into their countries. And he's saying that rather than excluding people who have opposite values, we should exclude a country who shares our values. It's so hypocritical. These guys, I mean, if they weren't speaking to absolute idiots in the media and in their own countries, everybody would say, oh, my God, shut up. Instead of making such a fool of yourself. Okay, so Yahweh was saying that don't perform any of the work of the heavenly messenger, feminine. This is the Isha that we've been asked to come into contact with, and he calls this a Estem day, a life sustaining and empowering, a day that is so important. It's as important to Yahweh and to our relationship with him as our skeleton is to our physical being.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a stem means. That's how important this day is, according to Yahweh.
Yeah, that's very telling. You can't stand up if you don't have backbone.
Right. And it isn't the whole purpose of all of this so that we can stand in God's presence? And he calls this the day that enables us to stand? This is the essential day. This is the backbone day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he says, indeed. Truly, surely, this is the day of reconciliations. Now, just in case Yom Kippurim was confusing to us, what does he say next? For you to be pardoned and forgiven, kapar.
Mm-hmm.
He uses the verbal form of the noun that he chose to title the day, reconciliations. He used the verbal aspect of it, written exactly the same way, to tell us unequivocally that the day of reconciliations is to be forgiven, to be pardoned. So I was asking you earlier, since this is clearly the day for forgiveness, how does that sit amongst Yahweh's other days for forgiveness, like Christmas? What does he have to say about Christmas?
He has nothing to say about Christmas other than don't do it, it's pagan.
Yeah, how about Easter?
The same thing, paganism. We know that comes out of Babylon. That's Nimrod's story.
So here you've got Yahweh announcing this is the day of reconciliations, and not one Christian in a million answers the invitation. But virtually all Christians go off and participate in the Babylonian and pagan holidays of Christmas and Easter.
Right.
So what do you think the odds are that God's going to look the other way?
I know. He's just going
We don't have to wonder, because he said this is the day, this day of reconciliations is for you to be forgiven in the presence of Yahweh, your God. So the purpose of is to we can be forgiven, so we're now perfect, and our relationship is reconciled with Yahweh, who just happens to be God. Then he says, here's the answer. Because any soul who, by way of relationship, Asher, does not low, respond to the summons and answer, Ana, on this essential day, this life-sustaining, corporeal, and empowering day, these shall be cut off and separated. Karat, excommunicated and banished, uprooted and exterminated, vanquished and expelled from the family.
That's very scary.
Whoa.
That is very scary.
Isn't the whole purpose of the Torah, isn't the whole purpose of the covenant to establish God's family?
Well, yeah, it's to go back to the way it was when Adam and Shaw walked out of the garden.
You're right. To have us come back into his home as his children and his family.
But you come back on his terms.
Right. And Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother working together as one because they are one.
Mm-hmm.
Inviting us back home to be part of his family. The covenant is an invitation to be part of God's family. Mm-hmm. And these seven meetings that God has established each year, which Yom Kippurim is the sixth of the seven, is the pathway and the doorway to enter God's home and to camp out with him on Sukkah.
Exactly.
Enter his tent. Sukkah.
What a better plan.
Oh, my. It's a spectacular plan. And all we have to do is answer the summons and respond to God's invitation. And yet, Christians would prefer Christmas and Easter to what God has invited us to benefit from.